Welcome to Urban Forum Northwest with your host, Eddie Rye Jr. We're going to start right out with Bishop Gary L. Tyson, who is the pastor of the Goodwill Missionary Baptist Church. He's also the president of the General Convention, General Baptist Convention Northwest. He also is being joined by Chad Lawson Cooper, who is executive producer of the off-Broadway play Justice on Trial Reloaded. So we're going to start with Bishop Tyson. Bishop Tyson, first of all, give us a Easter greeting and then go right into your dialogue, sir.
Well, grace and peace, everyone. Thank you, Mr. Eddie Rye, Godfather of the City, for inviting me to come and to share on today. I was posed with the question, the new civil rights movement, which I believe is that the Black community, along with the Black churches, will need to continue to fight against gentrification. Gentrification is where our poor urban areas are changed by wealthier people of a different color whose skin has not been darkened by Mother Nature. And they're moving into our communities after they're improving housing and taking Black-owned homes and Black-owned businesses, attracting new businesses that does not attract our community, typically displacing the current Black population in the process. In our communities of color, I think we are 30 years too late, but the best time to plant a tree, I believe, is today. We can complain about what we haven't done, but we must start today. The best way, I believe, to create generational wealth, Mr. Rye, is through home ownership. And that's just what I believe. And I'm called in this last season of my ministry, this last quarter, to help save Black churches in the Central District and to save Black soils by providing home ownership. So the Black church, who owns more debt-free property in our communities than any other nonprofit entity, Black-owned, whether it be Urban League or NAACP, has to start building affordable homes in our communities to create opportunities for our people that have already been gentrified out to have an opportunity to buy back in. I believe that is the number one new civil rights movement that's happening in our communities. I believe voting rights is still a challenge for us. The Voting Rights Act of 1965 has really been undermined, and there's just widespread access all across our country of voter suppression that's still happening. Thank God for Black women like Stacey Abrams from Atlanta, who's on the forefront of fighting this. I believe the criminal justice reform is needed in our communities. That's part of the new civil rights movement as well. And it's just really a continuation of things that were already started. I believe that economic equality and economic empowerment to our communities is a new civil rights movement. There's something that's called the Poor People's Campaign, a project that was conceived in the heart and the mind of Dr. King to combat poverty through housing and income. And that's what I'm talking about. The original effort kind of ended, slowed down after King was assassinated. We have real soul brother preachers like William Barber II of North Carolina, who's pushing that agenda. And so in the United States, the fight to secure full civil rights for African-American people has endured for centuries. The movement has included voices, among them working people, charismatic activists, musicians, athletes, and artists. The civil rights movement was among the most important historical developments of the 20th century and one of the most remarkable mass movements in American history, which is our history. And lastly, not only did it decisively change the legal and the political status for African-American people, but it also prefigured as well the moral premises and the methods of struggle for other historically oppressed groups seeking, and we call them now the BIPOC community, seeking rights in their community. So with that being said, one of the things that I believe that I can do as a pastor in our community is make sure that we keep in the forefront of our people the education of Black history. And one of the things that we're doing in the month of April, we're bringing in African-American play entitled Justice on Trial. And the owner of it is on with us today. He's Pastor Chad Lawson Cooper. He's the only Black-owned theater film company on Broadway in Times Square. He's in our city promoting this off-Broadway play, which will be at Goodwill Baptist Church on April 27th at 6 p.m., Justice on Trial. With that being said, I'd like to turn it over now to Brother Chad Lawson Cooper.
Brother Chad.
Thank you, Bishop. Good evening, or good day to everyone. I just had a oral surgery, emergency surgery, so that's why I have on my mask. But I wanted to definitely be a part of this Zoom because it's so very important that we get this message or keep this message out in the atmosphere, our history, who we are. We come from greatness. We were not slaves brought over here, but we were kings and queens brought over here, made to be slaves. And so the message has to continue. There was a time that this country wanted it to be illegal for slaves to read. Now they're trying to make it illegal to read about slaves because they want us to forget the past. But we can never forget the past because the past is what makes us who we are. So Justice on Trial is a production that deals with two civil rights attorneys suing the U.S. Justice Department for reparations and ongoing systemic racism within the African-American diaspora. So we bring back time traveler witnesses such as Harriet Tubman, Medgar Evers, Emmett Till, and Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois to testify to a modern-day multicultural jury, Blacks, whites, and Hispanics. And they deliberate their stories all the way up until George Floyd or whatever is current that we're dealing with, which is always something that we're dealing with pertaining to the injustices of African Americans. So it's produced by yours truly, Chad Lawson Cooper, from a number of movies. In fact, one of them will be showing tonight here in the city at New Hope, a revival of the movie, which is an all-Black cast portraying Jesus and the disciples, because we got tired of seeing the narrative told a different way. So we changed the narrative to what is more of a correct narrative, which stars Chaka Khan, a plethora of Black people have come together. Molly Music plays Jesus in this. So back to Justice on Trial. It's produced by yours truly and Harry Lennox. Many of you know him from The Five Heartbeats or I Go to Blacklist. But we have an amazing cast. Even the character of W.E.B. Du Bois is played by his blood grandson, Jeffrey Du Bois Peck. We have toured around the country from, of course, we originated from New York. We spent 2 years off Broadway consistently there, and then we've taken it around the country from the West Coast to the East Coast to the South, all over. And we're continuing to draw momentum because it's a message that really needs to be told. So I commend Bishop Tyson for connecting with us and bringing us to the city, because it's not just a one person's situation here. It's all of our situations. If one person is struggling with social or systemic racism, then we all have to make that our problem, and we all have to come together and have a solution. And I think the educational value and the educational prowess of this production will leave an indelible mark that cannot be erased. And it's just one piece of the puzzle that we're contributing, and we got to keep this stuff up. So we're honored to be coming on April the 27th. We're going to be honoring community leaders such as yourself, Mr. Rye, Bishop Tyson. Actually, he said you got to honor Mr. Mr. Rye because he makes such a difference in the community, and other leaders will be honored that continue to fight this fight for our community with the Presidential Lifetime Achievement Award, and some will be honored with the W.E.B. Du Bois Humanitarian Award. So we're very excited. The cast is excited. The whole troop, my whole team is excited to be here in Seattle and to be bringing this very important production to your city. So thank you for this opportunity to share with your audience.
You know, in a couple of weeks, it would be good, Bishop and Mr. Chad Lawson Cooper, if we could get some of the cast members on, because we are doing it by Zoom, so we could have multiple people on. It would be good for the community to be able to see some of those folks. And then another thing, in terms of this program, 1 hour after the live broadcast, maybe 2 hours, Eric, the operations manager of the station, will have this up on Alexa, as well as online and on my podcast, 24/7 for the next week. And then they go on urbanforumnw.com for a year. So I want to thank both of y'all, and give one more shout out to what's happening this evening, Bishop Tyson.
Yes, thank you, Eddie. So ironically, Dr. Jeffries at the New Hope Baptist Church had chosen a movie this week to show during Passion Week. Unbeknownst to him, he had no idea this is a God moment, that the movie he chose, it was written and produced by Chad Lawson Cooper, who just so happens to be in Seattle. And so we're going to, all roads lead at 6 o'clock over at New Hope Baptist Church, where we're going to share in the movie. And then Chad's going to talk to everyone that's there about his inspiration of writing this movie.
Okay, well, I want to thank you, Bishop Tyson, and also executive producer Chad Lawson Cooper. People, if you're looking for something to do this evening, go and see the fruits of Chad Lawson Cooper. So thank both of you gentlemen, and we'll see you again before the 27th of April. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you so much.
My next guest is Reverend Dr. Linda Smith and Reverend Dr. Carrie Anderson. Reverend Smith is the pastor of Martin Luther King Memorial Baptist Church in Renton, Washington, and Dr. Carrie Anderson is the pastor at Seattle's First AME Church. So, on next Thursday, April 4th, is the 56th anniversary of the assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And I want to let the Martin Luther King Church go first, Pastor Anderson. So, Reverend Dr. Linda Smith, tell us a little bit about your feelings now, being the 56th anniversary. You see which way the country is sliding backwards towards more overt discrimination. The discrimination never left, as far as I'm concerned. And economic discrimination is the worst form in the world. So why don't you share your thoughts with us on that topic, ma'am?
Okay. Well, thank you for having me. And thank you to my esteemed colleagues who are here this afternoon. Let me say, I'm grateful that we continue to give voice around issues of injustice. Because if we don't, you know, we'll slip back into the old space. But I am, as you've said, a pastor, Martin Luther King Baptist Church, and I'm also the executive leader of Renton King County Black Alliance for Equity, Justice, and Justice, and member of the Poor People Campaign. And all of this involves really continuing to raise issues around injustices and impacting our government officials. So I think April 4th for me marked a very pivotal day in the history of this country, and particularly for African Americans. Ironically, the day of Dr. King's death was a time in which those who I believe had lost hope was beginning to gain trust of the realization of the American dream becoming a reality. Dr. King was the hope that we had been waiting for. I know I speak to that personally. He stirred inside of us a courage and the will to stand up and give voice to things that impact our lives. Dr. King was not just concerned about the South, which is where I'm from, but he spoke to the plight of Black Americans all across this country. He had a dream for all, but unfortunately, you know, it appears, as we've heard Dr. Tyson state, that Black Americans have been dropped from the dream. April 4th marks that moment for me where I feel like in so many ways we still have access only to the crumbs and not the whole pie. With the crumbs, we cannot allow the injustices, the poor and those in poverty, to be scattered in the ruins of life. Black Americans make up 12% of the middle class and 13% of the population. However, we have more and more people falling into poverty. King reminded us that America has defaulted on her promissory note insofar as her citizens of color, particularly Black. Instead of honoring the sacred obligation, you know, people have been given a bad check, and we still see that lived out. We see it in the ongoing threat of oppression to voters' rights, and that's not just the South, it's all over. Reparation rights for Black Americans, economic, health care, mass incarceration. One of the things that really impacts us is the Black mothers who are highest rates in homelessness with children, poverty and low wages, gun violence, all of those things, health care inequities, for too many of our Black mothers died giving birth, education inequities, and access to home ownership certainly is at the heart of the work that we've been doing. But one of the things that, as I reflected upon this, is that I believe that is often overlooked is the prophetic voice of the church that Dr. King pushed and that he used to elevate the issues of injustice. I recently listened to a very powerful speech from Dr. Cornel West, who talked about, he challenged the church to concrete lives of service as opposed to abstract way of existence. And basically what he was saying was, when we have an abstract way of existing, we become indifferent to the issues of the world of injustices. So I think as I sort of,
I hope you don't run for president.
So the silence of injustice, no matter what realm, give those who have the power to change the narrative permission to continue the oppressive behavior towards those who are living in deep poverty. As I sort of sum up my comments, I think what Dr. King did was to raise his voice about the inequities and injustice of the world. And I feel that in order to continue to advance in our world, we have to have both the political and the prophetic will and courage to continue to ensure that justice roll on like a river in righteousness. Dr. King was really inspired the courage in people to speak up. And I think that's one of the most powerful things that we can do as particularly pastoral leaders, prophetic leaders of our community, is to continue to provide that political courage, the prophetic power and the political courage to instill that in this generation, that there's still more work to be done. I often think about that they may have killed a man, but they did not kill the dream in pursuit of justice. And so
we gotta keep up the fight. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. So more than that, you know, more than reflect, we must reimagine and re-engage in the dream. And as we continue this sacrifice of our ancestors, unite, echoing the spirit of resiliency and determination. And I heard Dr. Tyson talk about education and retelling the story and just, you know, really getting involved and stand together as a community and working together to build a community. Together, united we stand, divided we fall. So I just am grateful to be in the midst of those who are working for justice and the little bit that I try and do here on this end. And I know that it's making a difference, but I think the education to our younger people really understanding the impact of what has happened and what is continuing to happen and to give voice. So thank you for having me this afternoon.
Dr. Linda Smith. We're going to go to Reverend Dr. Kerry Anderson, the pastor of Seattle's First AME Church, for his reflections. And Dr. Kerry Anderson, I heard mentioned that gun violence, and I know that you have taken the lead to bring people together. Could you address that and also your reflections on Dr. King?
Well, first of all, let me say good afternoon to everyone that's on the program today, and especially to you, Brother Rye. We're praying for you as our elder statesman and leader, and we're praying for your wife and family as you continue to heal and get better. To my esteemed colleagues, it's always a pleasure to share a platform with Bishop Tyson, and to my dear sister in love and sister in ministry, the Reverend Dr. Linda Smith, and to all those who have spoken before. Just want you all to know I got my ticket, so I'm going to be there at Goodwill. I got my VIP ticket, so we want to push that. We want to push that trial, justice on trial. But 2 days ago, I guess it was now, Bishop Tyson and others, about 14 pastors assembled together to begin the process of coming up with a strategy to address violence in the streets amongst our youth and young adults here in the greater Seattle area. And it was a meeting that brought us all together in one space. And there's no one leader, you know, Reverend Lim Charleston and Reverend Lawrence Ricky Willis called the meeting together. And the clergy stopped what they were doing. Everyone had to rearrange their schedule, and they did, to come to First AME Church for the initial meeting so that we can put our collective genius together to come up with a strategy. We want to be preemptive and proactive before the summer months hit to let our community know that our doors are open. We're going to put programs in our churches during the summer. We're going to be working with community-based organizations, African-based, African-American-based programs to let our youth and young adults know that there's a place to go, that you can be safe, you can have fun, and you can enhance your skills in whatever it is that attracts your mind. And so this is why we have come together. We just had our initial meeting, and it's going to circulate to other churches as we convene in a strategic way. Let me just say happy Holy Week to all of us that are on the call and those listening in. And when we talk about Dr. Martin Luther King, and we're just a week away from April 4th, which was the date of his assassination, I'm going to be in Memphis at that time attending a meeting.
And we will be at the Holgate Street Church of Christ, the Martin Luther King Commemoration Committee. We'll be down there having something to eat at 5. The program starts at 6. So anyway, just have to throw that in too, sir.
Got to. And so we want everybody to assemble at Holgate Church of Christ at that time. What time is it again?
It's going to be, food will be served like at 5 o'clock. The program will start at 6.
So 6 o'clock for the program, 5 o'clock for the grub. Amen.
Yes.
And so let me just say this. Martin Luther King Jr. was theologically trained. He was trained in head, heart, mind, and body. And as a young 20-something year old pastor was thrust into this thing, but he had the intellect and the insight to know that ministry has to do with an intersection with community. And mind you, when he was assassinated in Memphis on April 4th, 1968, I was 9 years old. When he was assassinated at that time, he was standing up for sanitation workers, for a living wage, fighting for a living wage. This is what ministry is about. It's bringing life to those who are living in the streets, those that are living every day. And we take the message from the church to the streets so that our message is relevant, our message is real, and our message is for everyone that is oppressed. One of the things that came out in our session with the clergy was bringing up the Reverend Dr. James H. Cone, who is a prolific writer and really did the voluminous work on Black theology, Black power. And one of his early works was God of the Oppressed, meaning God is on the side of the oppressed, not the oppressor. And he used as his theological framework the book of Exodus, God leading the children of Israel out of slavery into the Canaan promised land. So this is what ministry is about. And he was strategic, Martin Luther King Jr. was, in where he protested, how he protested, where he was going to get arrested, to bring light to the civil rights movement to help change this world systemically. And so with that, this is what we're about today. If we're going to be ministering to the 21st century in a post-modern world, we've got to do this.
You know, I want to share, and I need to, if I haven't before, what Reverend Linda Smith was talking about. 50 years ago, actually, I was the chair of the Central Seattle Community Council Federation's Housing Committee. and we dropped the first report on redlining in 1974. 50 years later, everything that was in the report has come to fruition. But the other thing is, African-American businesses are not participating equitably in this Infrastructure and Jobs Act money, and the National Association of Minority Contractors is raising all kind of sand with the governor and everybody else. And we also have been engaging members of the Congressional Black Caucus. We've had letters of support from Senator Patty Murray, from Congressman Adam Smith, from Congressman Benny Thompson, and Congresswoman Marilyn Strickland. And they keep telling us that the Department of Transportation is going to investigate this thing, and nothing ever happens. So anyway, I want to thank you and keep up the good work. And Hayward and I will make sure that all the information that's needed to make sure that, because we need advocates everywhere. And we started talking about being left out. After the governor signed an executive order restoring affirmative action in January of 2022, at the end of the year, Black firms did 0.22%. That's how you lose a whole part of the city when you have that kind of discrimination. Economic discrimination is horrible. And we also got to deal with people that causes us that harm. So thank you all very much. We got to take a break. But I'll hope to see all you guys back real soon, because you're all doing something good, significant, and the people need to hear it. Okay, so I want to make sure that you are heard. And like I said, this program will be available for them to hear in a couple hours, 24/7. So if you talk to anybody and want to know what Bishop Tyson had to say, or Reverend Linda Smith had to say, or what you had to say, Pastor Carey, they can go on Alexa and hear it. So Eric, let's take this break and come back with Hayward Evans.
Hi, my name is Mian Rice, the Diversity of Contracting Director for the Port of Seattle. As a public agency, the Port of Seattle serves the community, and our investments should benefit everyone who lives and works here. The Port is committed to equity, diversity, and inclusion, and to leveling the playing field. That means continuing to open doors to contracting opportunities to all, especially women and minority-owned and disadvantaged businesses. How can you participate? List your business in Vendor Connect, a database of contractors. Attend PortGen workshops to learn how to do business with the port. Learn more about contracting opportunities at portseattle.org. For more information on operating a concessions at Seattle Tacoma International Airport, visit lease.ctacshops.com.
At Sound Transit, we not only connect more people to more places, we're making life better for all. We're connecting diverse neighborhoods to an entire region of opportunities, like jobs and school. If you have an Orca card, you can just tap and go. We have reduced fares for seniors and riders with disabilities. For adults with lower incomes, check out Orca Lift and pay just a dollar for your ride. To plan your trip or to learn more, visit us at soundtransit.org.
Conversation you won't find on the rest of the dial. Alternative Talk 1150.
I want to thank SeaTac Bar Group, LLC, the two brothers that have the Africa Lounge and Mountain Room Bar on Concourse A, the Port of Seattle Diversity Contracting Office, Sound Transit's Office of Civil Rights, Equity, and Inclusion, and the City of Seattle's Purchase and Construction Services Office. So I also want to give a shout out to there are several Good Friday events that will be occurring. Reverend Terrence Proctor is hosting one at the Church by the Side of the Road. And the main feature speaker is Reverend Dr. Robert L. Manaway, Sr. And that will be at 7 o'clock p.m. And then there's another Good Friday celebration will be at New Hope. It will be at 6 p.m. And then at noon tomorrow, Reverend Dr. Carrie Anderson will be hosting a Last Seven Words tomorrow at 12 noon. That's Friday, 29th at 12 noon. My next guest is Hayward Evans, a co-convener of the Seattle King County Martin Luther King Jr. Celebration Continuation Committee. The 56th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. King is next Thursday, April 4th, and we cannot let any day with Dr. King's name, no matter how tragic it is, we got to remember his purpose in life and what he did for everyone, because all the gains that he and the civil rights leaders got for us are under attack and being neutered. So it's time for us to stand back up. And I like to say, I have all people stand up, a rainbow coalition, but it was Black folks who got civil rights in 64. It was Black folks who got voting rights in 65. And being from Louisiana for the first 10 years of my life, Black folks rode in the back of the bus. So Hayward Evans, welcome to Urban Forum Northwest. and give us a rundown on what people can expect on next Thursday, April 4th, on the anniversary of Dr. King's assassination.
And if I could just add, first, thank you for having me, Eddie. And if I can just add on what you said, is Black people who are at the head of the spear right now, and the one that these folks are trying to bury in the ground again, from the Supreme Court and that guy, Donald Trump, running for president. Everybody needs to get out here, vote, and make sure that man doesn't get elected. But on a softer note, which is still it's a little hurtful because, again, April 4th, 68, Dr. King was assassinated. He was literally murdered because of his political beliefs and trying to uplift those people, not just Black folks, but uplift all people who were oppressed. I mean, that's what he was about. It was about, regardless of race, regardless of your religious orientation, social justice is supposed to be justice for all, not just us going to jail and not getting those contracts. But on April 4th, down at Holgate Street Church, we're going to have the sixth anniversary.
I need you to hold on right quick, Congressman Benny Thompson. Hayward, Eric, has Congressman Thompson logged on? Okay.
Congressman, he'll be right Thompson. With you in just one moment. He'll be with you in just one moment.
Okay. All right, Hayward, go ahead. He'll be here in one moment.
Oh, okay, I'm saying, look at our program.
At least you got interrupted by a congressman.
hey, God is good. Holgate Street Church. And, you know, we're giving away five awards, and these are outstanding people. We call it April 4th, the day King was assassinated. We call it the Day of Remembrance. And for the last 3 years, we've been pushing it as a day that everybody should reflect on those people in your life who've passed away, who you loved, and then reflect on those people who made significant contributions in the areas of civil rights and social justice. This is a time to think about the people like Edwin T. Pratt, who ran the Urban League, but yet he was assassinated. He was murdered, never found his murderer. It's a time we can think of, how many Black folks know the first Black senator in the state of Washington? Well, his name was John Henry Ryan. And we're talking about back in the 30s, when we have an award named after him, because again, we need to reflect back on those folks who've done so much for us. And for me, Eddie, and you know this is true, one award is named after George Washington Bush. And for folks who don't know the history, this is a Black man. He led a wagon train from Missouri to the state of Washington. And because of his settlement, first he went to, just for folks to know, first he went to the old Oregon Territory. Down in Oregon, if you were Black and you stayed over a day, you had to get 40 lashes. So they had the Black laws. So he's Black. He had to leave and go north of the Columbia River. Which is in the state.
Hey, well, let's see if Congressman Benny is logged on. Congressman Benny, are you there? Well, I still see he's muted. Okay.
I'm saying because of George Washington Bush, the state of Washington was created. From the Washington Territory to the state of Territory, he had the first American settlement in the Washington Territory was a Black man. And he's the reason why we had a state, because they were, when England was negotiating with then the United States, they used the 38th parallel because of his settlement in the Pacific Northwest. And he needs to get more credit for that. But we have an award named after him, and that's that's the George Washington Bush Lifetime Achievement. And that's going to Carolyn Riley Payne, past president of the NAACP. She's the one that brought in all that money.
Go 40 Carolyn. Years with NAACP Axel, too.
And ran with Axel and goes all the way back to the president emeritus, Lacey Steele. Miss him. God bless him. We have another award that's, of course, the Edwin T. Pratt.
Oh, we got Congressman Thompson on. Hey, Congressman Benny.
Hey, brother, how you doing?
Okay, I can hear you. Hayward Evans, my co-convener of the Martin Luther King Commemoration and Continuation Committee, is on the line. But go right ahead, sir.
Well, you know, I'm always happy to be on your show. I think it's so important to keep people informed as to what's going on. There are a lot of things going on in this country. As you know, I chaired the January 6th Select Committee, and there are folk running around here saying, that wasn't really true. That was just like a congressional tour. And I'm trying to say, wait now, you trying to say what I saw with my own eyes was in effect not what I saw. But the unfortunate thing is that same person who created that problem is now the leading candidate and the nominee to be president again 4 years later. Something wrong with that picture. And so with your program and a few others, I hope that we continue to enlighten America that our democracy is still at risk. And it's so every day we fight long and hard to make sure that our affirmative action programs stay in place. President Biden now talks about diversity, equity, and inclusion. And these Republicans are trying to do away with that. They said, oh, we don't need these laws anymore. We're just one and the same. But you know, if you haven't walked in a black man's shoe, you really don't know how they feel. And so that's why your program, the Congressional Black Caucus, NAACP, and other organizations are still on the firing line to try to keep the playing field level. Because the playing field for Black Americans is not where it ought to be. And the only way we can ever hope to get that playing field where it should be, to be quite honest with you, is for us to stay on the battlefield fighting for justice and the American way. So I'm so happy to be on your show. I've looked forward to it, and I'm so happy that the schedules allowed that to happen.
Well, certainly, we certainly appreciate you, Congressman Thompson. You know, we've had some challenges back in Washington State, and I want to thank you on behalf of the National Association of Minority Contractors, our Washington State chapter. You wrote a letter on our behalf in 2022, and we were told by Merrick Garland's office, Attorney General, that our complaint was sent over to the Department of Transportation. The national president, our Washington State chapter president, did another letter in October, and Kristen Clark in the Attorney General's office said the same thing. Oh, your complaint is being handled by the Department of Transportation. It's been over 2 years. We've not heard one word from the Department of Transportation. And we had support from Senator Patty Murray, Congressman Benny Thompson, Congressman Adam Smith, and Congresswoman Marilyn Strickland. And you would think with those at the time, you were the chair of Homeland Security Committee. Adam Smith was chair of the House Armed Services Committee. And Patty Murray was the second ranking senator. And Marilyn Strickland wrote a letter a little later. But you would think with that kind of support that something would have happened. But Pete Buttigieg and Department of Transportation and the Department of Justice have completely ignored our plight. Now, even after our governor signed an executive order, January 2022, after you saw 2021 with 0.18 for blacks, at the end of the year after the governor's executive order, blacks did 0.22. Our Department of Transportation have a goal for African-Americans of 1%. And I sent you some information how they use the prime contractors can hire the inclusion manager. And they had 10 black truckers go to a meeting on a contract about opportunities, and the contract had already been awarded. And the person that's getting all the contracts was self-certified, and he falsified his documentation. But our attorney general says he can reapply. And most times folks will be going to jail or something. But anyway, just your comments on that.
Well, look here, Bro Ryan. As you know, being black in America is a heavy burden. A double standard clearly exists. And so we have to just continue to fight. We struggle every day. We deal with it. On that January 6th thing again, if it had not been for the work of our committee, Merrick Garland never would have done anything, in my opinion, in terms of prosecuting these people. But we made the story so compelling. We showed the facts and circumstances where everybody saw how these terrorists broke into the United States Capitol. So now we have 1,300 people who either in jail, on their way to jail, and we're still looking for people, and we're picking people up on a weekly basis. They just picked a person up in my district 2 days ago who got identified when somebody started looking at the film from Kosciuszko, Mississippi. And they said, that guy lives down the street. So right now, citizens are helping us identify some of these people. But look, progress comes slow. And look, even our friends, we have to sometimes nudge our friends to make them do the right thing. Courage and common sense among bureaucrats is a rare commodity. It really takes real courage to fight the system and enforce things on behalf of people of color. You're not asking for preferential treatment, but you don't want to be discriminated against. And if there's a history of discrimination, you have to apply a remedy. You can't try to say, well, we found discrimination and we're going to outlaw it for this day forward. But what about all those times that you did discriminate? We have to somehow make amends for that. And so that's why we come up with goals and standards to enhance minority business opportunities in this country. So we playing catch up. It's unfair for you to say, oh, everything's equal. And I tell some of my friends, that's sort of like saying, Bennett Thompson, you can finally put your mount into the Kentucky Derby. You know, you were black and you wasn't allowed to put your mount in the Kentucky Derby. Well, on Derby Day, you have a thoroughbred and I have a jackass. Who's going to win the Derby? So you have to give me a leg up to help bring my mount up to your mount. So that's why we have set aside and other things put together to give people an opportunity to compete among equals. Now, if I'm in a jackass race and everybody got a jackass, then we got a chance of winning. But it's unfair to tell me that after these years of discrimination, just the fact that I can bid on a project against a person who's been bidding all their life, and that's fair, that's not true. So that's why you need the Congressional Black Caucus to help set the record straight. And so we do it. You talked about Sister Strickland. We endorsed her election for mayor. She was a mayor, but now she's in Congress. But they told us, well, there's no way she could win there. Guess what? She's a congressperson now. And it's because not only did we raise money on behalf, but people we could influence, that you have somebody who's a stellar individual who has an opportunity to come to Congress and do better. And so we're now looking at this coming election in November. I will take Joe Biden at 81 any day than Donald Trump with 91 criminal indictments. Now, you got to come with the facts. We know this guy's record. The insult to injury, Bro Rye, came earlier in the week when he has the audacity to start selling Bibles. And I'm trying to say, wait, what have we come to? You know, he sold water. He sold steaks. He sold a school. He did everything. He swindled folk through his investments and then filed bankruptcy. And when they asked him, he said, well, it wasn't my money. And now this is somebody who's, you know, the saying says, fool me once is one thing, but fool me twice is my fault. And so what we have right now and the Congressional Black Caucus's role is to help clear the path. We get elected. We get an opportunity to speak an independent voice on what's happening with Black America. If we don't show up in record numbers, Donald Trump will be president. He can go play golf every day. He doesn't have to campaign because his vote is locked in. What we have to do with your show and others around the country, we have to roll up our sleeves, do the hard work, knock on doors, stand on street corners, do whatever we need to do to turn out the vote. That's over and beyond, you know, the technology part. There's nothing like meeting people and having that conversation. And we're going to have to do it. Congressional Black Caucus is prepared to do whatever we need to do. Look like we might have three or four more members in the next Congress who are African-American. If we are successful in taking back the House, Hakeem Jeffries will be third in line for the presidency of the United States because he'd be Speaker of the United States House of Representatives. A fella who looked like us, very talented, working very hard from New York City. Only in America can that possibility exist. And I want to be part, like you and your listeners, of helping make that happen. But we can only help it and make it happen by working very hard. So I'm committed to it. I'm looking forward. And let me tell you, the excitement is kind of moving in the right direction. But we're going to have to work with that 18 to 30-year-old, you know, because there's some confusion out here. And we have to help set the record straight. And the Black Caucus is prepared to do it along with other organizations. And so we're on track. We're on track.
And that's good news, Congressman. That's real good news, Congressman Thompson. And we would have a lot more enthusiasm if we got included in the pie that our tax dollars help create. That's one thing that's still a challenge in Washington State. So, you know, we've been reaching out for help and been promised by the highest ranking people in the U.S. government that something was going to happen. And to be ignored for 2 years is a little hard to take. So whatever you and the Congressional Black Caucus do to help us, we certainly would appreciate, because we have people ready to sell their stuff so they can eat because they can't work.
Yeah. Look, the struggle continues. There's no question about it. As I've told you several times, that most difficult job in America is being Black. And it's on a daily basis, and we just have to acknowledge that. And we have to work to overcome it. Okay. But those individuals who have enjoyed the benefit of keeping people of color back, they're not going to give it up voluntarily. You're going to have to fight and take it. And that doesn't mean you have to do a January 6th style effort, but you're going to have to do it the way the framers of the Constitution said. You can make sure that your voices are heard in all the places. And then you solicit all your friends to come and join the effort. And that's what the Congressional Black Caucus is intent on doing. And look, we're not going to give up. Buttigieg is going to be here in Mississippi in about 3 weeks. I guarantee you, he's going to be shocked when I ask him about your problem in Washington State, because he gonna know what the hell. I'm in Mississippi. What you want to know about Washington? I said, look, Mr. Secretary, we are all in the same boat. You know, if the boat sinks, it doesn't matter whether I'm in the front of the boat or the back of the boat. We sunk. So Black Americans are united. So we're gonna work through that, brother. So I'm gonna lay it on it.
Well, I sure appreciate it. I hope you got all the documentation.
Oh, no, we got everything. I got all the emails.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you, sir.
Well, all right, my brother.
I appreciate that. I appreciate you hiring Angela Ryan, too, to let her go to the top to end up being the youngest senior advisor and counsel on the Hill at 29 years old. So
yes, sir.
Kicking. So thank you.
Well, look, sir. Look, in the country, you know, when you help make people get to the next level, you always say, I had something to do with raising that girl. And right. I claim her. I claim her. Absolutely.
Okay. I'm from Shreveport. That's where I was born and spent the first 10 years of my life. So I know exactly what you're saying, brother. I'm from down home, too. Okay. Thank you very much, Congressman.
All right. Appreciate Always. It. Good talking to you. Stay
Good
strong.
You, too. Okay. Okay, Eric, why don't we take this quick break while we wait on Mr. Darrell?
At Sound Transit, we not only give people more reliable ways to get around, we're connecting diverse neighborhoods to an entire system of opportunities, like jobs, school, friends and family, and to the airport. Our commitment to economic development provides opportunities for women and people of color to compete fairly for Sound Transit contracts. All of this helps our regional workforce grow and thrive. Go to soundtransit.org and search DBE to learn more.
Hi, my name is Mian Rice, the Diversity of Contracting Director for the Port of Seattle. As a public agency, the Port of Seattle serves the community, and our investments should benefit everyone who lives and works here. The Port is committed to equity, diversity, and inclusion, and to leveling the playing field. That means continuing to open doors to contracting opportunities to all, especially women and minority-owned and disadvantaged businesses. How can you participate? List your business in Vendor Connect, a database of contractors. Attend PortGen workshops to learn how to do business with the port. Learn more about contracting opportunities at portseattle.org. For more information on operating a concessions at Seattle-Tacoma International Airport, visit lease.ctacshops.com.
An alternative to everything else on your radio dial. Alternative Talk 1150.
All right, Eddie Ride back at Urban Forum Northwest. I want to thank the SeaTac Bar Group, LLC, the two Iraq veteran officers own the African Lounge and the Mountain Room Bar, the Port of Seattle's Diversity Contracting Office, Sound Transit's Office of Civil Rights, Equity, and Inclusion, and the City of Seattle's Purchase and Construction Services Office. And we're going to go back to Heywood Evans, who's given us details on what's going to be happening on April 4th, the 56th anniversary of the assassination of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and a lot of the benefits that Black people enjoyed on our way towards equality, we never really got there, was due to Dr. King and other civil rights leaders' efforts that caused Lyndon B. Johnson to sign the Great Society programs, many of which were killed by Ronald Reagan. Okay, so Heywood, tell us about the rest of the program. We got a minute or so left.
We're going to have an absolutely fantastic program. It's going to be held at Holgate Street Church of Christ. That's two blocks north of Martin Luther King Jr. Civil Rights Memorial Park, on Martin Luther King Jr. Way. We're going to be giving out five awards. This is the day we call a day of remembrance. It's for everyone to remember those folks who passed away and who've had significant impacts on their lives. It's a time to remember and reflect. But also it's a time to reflect on those people who've passed away who participated in the civil rights movement, who participated in our ability to move up. We're going to be giving out five awards at this event. I'm going to start with Yolanda Yaden. She's the executive director, president of the YMCA. And Eddie, you share with me, she's the first one in 150 years?
The first woman and the first person to come in 140 years of the history of the Greater Seattle YMCA.
She'll be getting the Thelma DeWitty Trailblazer Award. And for those who don't know, Thelma DeWitty was the first Black teacher hired by the Seattle Public School District. The next person, Katie Garro.
We're going to have to finish up tomorrow. We got about 30 seconds left, but you will be back next Thursday. And the ads will be in the Facts and the Medium. And there's also an ad on the KRIZ radio. And I've been invited to be on Rhythm and News with Chris V. Bennett tomorrow. I think it's 7:25 or 7:40. But anyway, Heywood, keep up the good work. And we're looking for the alphas to show up this time. It's time that Dr. King was an alpha. So Roberto Jordan, Clyde Merriweather, they're your alphas. And that's Heywood's group, too. They need to show up. Clarence Williams, we want the retired Black firefighters there. Okay? We want the folks from the park department there. We want people from the labor unions there. Because that's how Dr. King went down. So, okay. So this has been Eddie Ride with another issue of Urban Forum Northwest. I want to thank Eric and all my guests. And Heywood, we'll talk to you later this afternoon. All right. Thanks, Eric.